Hi, I'm Dr. Akiva Down.
And I'm Rabbi Avi Green.
And welcome to Interesting Questions.
In this podcast, we'll be addressing issues that are philosophical, religious, and psychological in nature.
We will be focusing on that which is considered to be controversial, and there may not be a right or wrong answer. So we are hoping that our discussions will yield more questions for your Shabbos table.
All right, so Avi, Pesach is coming, and sorry to ruin that for anybody if they weren't expecting it, but you know, it's the weirdest thing. 4 weeks after Pesach, or after Purim, we always seem to have Pesach. Suffice it to say, Pesach is coming, and that means everything is getting more expensive. Which, it's already difficult. Now, difficulter. And Avi, maybe it's a good opportunity for us to kind of talk about maybe either why it is that some stuff gets to be more expensive, how one is able to perhaps balance the trying to live within their means, but also trying to have a nice chag, and maybe all the in-betweens, maybe even a little bit about how maybe some stuff might not need a heksher, or whether or not it does, or why it might, or why it might not, or the questions go on and on. And the good news is whatever we talk about, there will be six other rebbeim who I'm going to confidently say will have 12 different answers at least.
So there's a couple of things that it may be too late for, but I'll at least put them out there in case it's not too late in your community. One of the things that sometimes goes up significantly is the price of kosher meat and chicken. And our shul rabbi, Rabbi Goldberg, always reminds people right around Purim time that any meat that is not ground, chicken, meat, even if it was prepared before they koshered whatever for Pesach, as long as it has not been ground, can be rinsed off and used for Pesach. So you can buy meat before it gets more expensive, assuming you have the freezer space in order to make it, in order to hold on to it. So that's one option. Another is that some of the things that we use year-round can be purchased and used for Pesach. So one of the things that I tend to do is I will keep an eye out starting even as early as January for sales on things like aluminum foil or paper plates or paper goods in general that I might be using during Pesach. And when those things will go on sale, I'll stock up on them, not just for when I need them, but for Pesach as well, and put some aside. Another suggestion is sometimes the big box stores, and I'm thinking of BJ's and Costco, will specifically get in items for Pesach or meat and chicken that can be purchased for Pesach. And while not all of us have those membership cards, sometimes we can find a friend who does. Or here's another little life hack. You can go in and purchase. You do not have to be a member to go in and purchase a gift card. And so you can go in and buy a Costco gift card for, say, $50, and then gift it to yourself. And you can then go in, you have to, I think, leave after you've purchased it, but you can leave and then come back and use it to purchase some of your Pesach goods. And even if you purchase more than $50 worth of Pesach goods, you can then just pay for the rest in cash or, I think, on a bank card. And so those may be some options to help limit your spending to a certain extent on Pesach. In terms of what requires a heksher, so it's a little bit more challenging because, generally speaking, There are some excellent books put out by the OU, the Chaf K, the Star K, that talk about what does and doesn't require a hechsher for Pesach, and whether I'll call it a common everyday hechsher, like an OU or a Chaf K, is sufficient, or whether it requires a specific Pesach designation. So, for instance, if you're buying aluminum foil, a regular kosher symbol is sufficient. It doesn't require a special Passover symbol. Alternatively, if you're buying something that is a food product, it almost certainly needs a Pesach symbol. And I'll give you an example. Tabachnik chicken soup, which we purchase year-round, right, runs special special batches for Pesach. And so if you want to use those, they require the symbol to have a specific designation for Pesach, as opposed to just being the year-round variety. And I can't say I can speak to what the difference is between the year-round versus the kosher for Pesach component, but I will say that, generally speaking, it does require that for food products, as opposed to non-food, non-edible products that we use with our food.
What about food products like honey or oils? Because I realize one is more complicated than the other in the answer.
Yeah, both. Yes, both can be slightly complicated. Oil is definitely more complicated. So let me speak to both of those. One is, in terms of honey and in terms of other food products, again, my experience is you should either default to the kosher for Pesach version, the version that has the kosher for Pesach symbol on it, or you should check one of the very reputable kashrut companies' lists, or ask your local Orthodox rabbi what the expectation is in your area. In terms of oil, it absolutely needs a kosher for Pesach designation, and that's because certain types of oil will use different blends, and sometimes those blends may include kitniot. In the past, in the far past, some types of oil that used kitniot were acceptable. People would use things like peanut oil for cooking. Today, I think most Ashkenazim who don't eat kitniot try to avoid even that kind of oil, and so trying to stay away from even kitniot oil or blends that include kitniot oil is something that generally people try to do.
Well, thank you for that, Avi. Throwing in the more challenging opinions where we see that, again, two rabbis, at least three opinions. One of the things that caught my eye way back when was a particular candy brand that many of us find synonymous with what goes in the candy dish for Pesach. And then reading on the back that it has corn syrup, and then wondering to myself as I'm reading there's a please note, liquefied legumes extracts, example corn syrup and kosher for Passover foods, are fully sanctioned for Ashkenazim and Sfardim alike by preeminent Orthodox halachic authorities, including the renowned Posek Hador Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. That to me is very confusing, because corn syrup is made of corn, and I'm pretty sure that we're not allowed to have corn. So what's with this liquefied corn? Because doesn't that mean that liquefied legumes in other forms, like peanut butter or hummus, theoretically, should be also acceptable if they're liquefied enough? And I realize I'm emphasizing, and yes, I say this as an Ashkenazi who is not able to have these legumes.
So Rav Spector was certainly a Gadol Hador. And it's also important to keep in mind that he was born in 1817 and passed in 1896. So we're not talking about someone who was living in a contemporary age. And at a time when limited products might have been available for Pesach, saying, well, we choose not to eat, right? We have a minhag, not to eat legumes, not to eat kitniot on Pesach. And we also have a halachic principle that sometimes when something changes form, it is different enough that we can say it is something different, right? Let's also keep in mind that the whole reason we choose not to eat kitniot is because we were worried that they were put into the same bags as wheat products, and therefore they would be intermingled. And in order to keep ourselves from getting anywhere close to having some sort of chametz on Pesach, since it is a biblical prohibition, we distance ourselves from legumes. Now, Sfardim continue to eat legumes, to eat kitniot on Pesach, and there is, I'm not going to remember the name of the event, but there are Sfardim, groups of Sfardim that have an event shortly before Pesach where they sit down with bags of rice and they will actually empty the bag of rice or part of the bag of rice into the part of the table, and then they will move the grains of rice from one side of the table to the other, specifically to make sure that the only thing that is going in there is rice and that no chametz is moving across the table, and therefore they are sure that their rice is chametz-free. These days, there are companies that have put out chametz-free rice, so that for Pesach, for Sfardim, but our minhagim are strong, and they continue to hold us to them, and therefore we as Ashkenazim continue not to eat kitniot. That being said, what we find is that even as we do this, and as keeping kosher has become easier because of production and of where we live, we as a community have chosen to take on certain stricter standards. So one of the examples of that might be the fact that growing up, when you and I were growing up, or at least when I was growing up, there was kosher meat, and then there was also glatt kosher meat. And glatt refers to the idea that the lungs of the animal are smooth, that there are no lesions, that when the lungs of the animal have been checked after it has been shechted, after it has been ritually slaughtered. And today, both because we have slightly more income and because it has become the standard, and hopefully because the cattle are healthier, perhaps, we say that, generally speaking, all meat coming into our households isn't just kosher, but it's glatt kosher. And so we assume that all of the meat that we receive today is actually glatt kosher meat and not just kosher stam, as it's sometimes called. And so the idea that if that's the case and we become more strict in certain things, so perhaps we've become a little bit more strict in this idea of kitniot as well, that we have other oils we can use. Certainly we can use olive oil, we can use certain other kinds of oil for Pesach, and so we no longer have to rely on peanut oil or other oils of kitniot in order to be able to make any sort of cooking done on Pesach. And therefore, there are people who, even though there was a heter to use kitniot oil, they choose not to. And that may be why certain items are still looked at questionably for Pesach.
All right, Next question, Avi. I like where this is going. I like that we have this, you know, firing squad, so to speak. I know I'm not a very aggressive firing squad, but so the next thing to talk about is there's certain things that if you buy it before Pesach, it doesn't need a heksher for Pesach, generally, but if you happen to buy the same exact thing after Pesach starts, all of a sudden it needs a heksher for Pesach. A classic example I would think it would be milk. Milk is one of those. And by the way, I've already heard the whole, well, because we do Birkat Chametz and we do Bior Chametz, so we assume that if there was any chametz in the milk, theoretically, it would be gone. But that should also apply to rice for Ashkenazim, because we would have said, if there's any chametz, the rice is okay. So I'm going to ask for something a little more specific, or I'm going to assume that all Ashkenazim should have rice as well as a sign of nonviolent resistance.
So you're absolutely correct. The classic example is milk or orange juice in some cases. And what we generally say is that, right, when you purchase milk, you don't expect to find any chametz inside your milk. In fact, the fact that we are able to purchase regular milk instead of Chalav Yisrael milk is based on Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak that we can rely on the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, to make sure that that milk is 100% cow's milk when it says it is, because farmers are far more nervous about losing their ability to provide milk for the FDA than they are about whether or not Jews are going to eat or drink some sort of other types of milk. But therefore, when it says 100% cow's milk, we can rely that it is. And therefore, it is kosher because it comes from a kosher animal. And we can rely on the fact that there probably isn't anything else in that milk because the process that they go through to collect the milk and to bottle it is such that there isn't going to be anything else in there. But if, God forbid, let's say as the milk was being transported, something spilled and landed on the outside of the carton, right? It isn't anything that's edible, but maybe it's a sticky spot that I didn't notice. And so when I do my biur chametz, my bittel, my statements of saying that all chametz that I own is null and void, and therefore I should it counts as nothing, it's dust of the earth, that is what I'm talking about, and therefore I can have purchased milk before Pesach and hold on to it during Pesach. When it comes to rice, right, we're talking about a slightly different process, because what we're worried about is not just that something might be there, but that actual grains of wheat or some other type of wheat, barley, oats, some sort of chametz material would have gotten in with the rice, right, with the raw rice. And then what I'm doing is I'm putting it into water to cook it. And that barley, let's say, right, now gains it hydrates in the water and it cooks. And now what I've actually done is created chametz. So it's not that something was there and I was worried that I might ingest it, which is where the biur and the bitul cover. It's that I'm worried I might actually create some chametz during Pesach, which is why if you talk to somebody who is from the Chabad sect, they don't get chametz wet on... I'm sorry, not just chametz, they don't get matzah wet on Pesach, because there's a tradition there that they're concerned that perhaps there were some little pieces of flour within the matzah that were still uncooked, and that if they got wet, they would then ferment, thus making chametz on Pesach. And so they don't get matzah wet except on the eighth day, because then you're pretty sure it's not going to happen, and it's not even really a biblical day, and so you have what's called a sfeik sveika, where you have a question about one thing and a question about a second thing, and so the two questions together mean you have less than a 50% chance of something happening, and therefore it's okay. So I think that this idea of, you know, well, we can take something that is essentially a non-chametz item, purchase it before, and use it, is very different than this idea of where this might contain chametz, and once we cook it on Pesach, it could lead to chametz. That is a different situation.
All right, so no rice, but also no entire month of Slichot, so, you know, there's that. I think this is always a nice opportunity to just, you know, review about medication, just briefly. Take your medication, follow your doctor's recommendations, please. Obviously, supplements are different, unless, of course, your doctor has told you otherwise. I will not poskin differently than any other doctor. And I know that there's some people who say, well, what about the fillers? Are they concerned about that? Some people try and fill their prescriptions before Pesach. I am sure that all of these are as ideal as possible. And at the same time, if, God forbid, you happen to get an infection over Pesach and you need to take an antibiotic, I'm going to suggest, unless there's a screaming difference from the rabbinical council in this area, right here and next to me, that take your antibiotic, please. Again, I think that's very important, and I think as much as we would like to say we'll fill our prescriptions before Pesach, the reality is that insurance does drive some of those decisions, and not, or availability of prescriptions, or the federal, well, not the same one, the DEA as opposed to the FDA, which says you can't have certain things at certain times before a certain time. So suffice it to say, if you can't fill it before, I'm still going to suggest that unless you hear it differently from your doctor, take your medication.
So I will agree, anything that is prescription, you should follow your doctor's orders. If you want more information, the Star K has an excellent guide to medications for Pesach. The question sometimes arises with non-prescription medication. So things like Tylenol or Advil or Claritin, or right, things that you can either purchase from behind the medical counter or even over the counter. I would suggest you look in the Star K's kosher for kosher for Pesach medicine guide, and or speak to your local Orthodox rabbi. Generally speaking, again, it is ideal to purchase a new container for Pesach of things, let's say, like Tylenol or Advil, if you know that you generally might partake of those. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Akiva, but generally speaking, those say stay useful long enough. The prescription does not run out, and you can put them away in your Pesach boxes for at least a couple of years, and they will stay good.
A number of medications don't necessarily expire or lose potency, I should say. Because that's really what we're talking about with medications, is the loss of potency. Some things do, antibiotics lose potency, vitamins lose potency, but generally speaking,
acetaminophen.
I think your acetaminophens and your ibuprofens tend to be pretty okay. But if you're really that concerned, get a small bottle.
Last but not least, I want to reiterate something we've talked about in a previous podcast about Pesach, which is Pesach cleaning is not about spring cleaning. It does not mean you have to go through every drawer. It does not mean you have to go through every, you know, spot or move your oven or try to lift up your refrigerator, right? Pesach cleaning is about removing chametz from your house. If you have spaces where you're fairly certain there is no chametz, you do not need to go clean in those areas. And perhaps most importantly, right, you don't have to do it all yourself, right? If you're going to invest some money in Pesach, one of the best things you can do is invest in someone to help you come clean, right? Because other people can wipe down your refrigerator or clean out your microwave or even clean your oven. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, that can be a killer. And then you can do one more, you know, round just to wipe things down and make sure it is to your standards. But if somebody else has already cleaned your refrigerator, then just hitting the important spots, the spots that they might have missed, can be a lot easier than trying to do it from scratch. And if you don't have additional help in the house, or you have young children in the house that you also have to take care of at the same time, or if you're an older adult and perhaps reaching some of those spots can be very difficult, then investing a little bit of money in having somebody to come and clean, or even trying to find somebody who's willing to do it as a chesed. Maybe there's a high school student who needs some community service hours or wants to do some chesed between now and Pesach. That can make a big difference in terms of trying to make sure that your house is clean for Pesach without saying every item and needs to be moved and everything in it needs to be cleaned.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to reach us, you can reach us at iqdiscuss@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you and responding.